And welcome to our podcast, The Truth About Public Sector. I'm Hannah Quinn Hill, and I am a public sector and procurement nerd and the host of this podcast. And I'm very, very excited to be joined by Simon Bullimore. Hi, Simon. So lovely to have you on the podcast.
Morning, Hannah. Thank you as always.
Absolutely. I'm going to start with asking you, Simon, please, could you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yes, so my name is Simon Bullimore. I work for the Norse Group. I'm the head of group procurement for the Norse Group. Our sphere of spend is massive. We are a public sector company, and we have a supply chain of some £200 million spread across a huge range of services. We work closely with councils, and my role is to head up the team and run all of our procurement and every single aspect of it.
Absolutely. And you know, it's really interesting because you've started there with a lot of words, abbreviations and things like that. And I know we've spoken on podcasts previously, like our other podcast, The Truth About Local Government, with Matt Masters. And one of the things that we cover in that is Norse Group. But for our listeners today, what is the Norse Group and what's its role in the public sector?
Yeah, so Norse Group are a LATCO, L-A-T-C-O, which stands for Local Authority Trading Company. And we can go into a little bit more of that with Tekel. But the business itself was formed in 1988 by Norfolk County Council under the ruling known as Tekel. And we operate in multiple spaces, multiple industries, including FM, consultancy, social care. And we offer a huge amount of services within those spaces. We partner with other local councils to provide services across multiple areas of the UK. And we've actually been award-winning because of what we do, and that is deliver a reliable, solid service into our public sector clients. We can offer a unique partnership model with local authorities. We call that joint ventures. And with these sort of current days of reduced outsourcing, it can often be quite an attractive option for our clients by setting up that joint venture. And the council retains a level of ownership of the joint venture, and we then work closely with them to take on certain services, achieve savings through efficiencies and economies of scale, etc. And the savings are then passed back in the form of a rebate. So we have a huge breadth of experience across multiple services. And one of the most important things we can deliver, of course, is governance. Because we are Norfolk County Council owned, governance is right at the top of the agenda. And of course, that's very prominent in what we do.
So that's, again, it's an interesting point that you raised there, because you are in part operating within the local authority space, you're owned by local authority, you have that relationship. So how does the Norse Group's model of working with local authorities actually differ from other service providers that we might, listeners might be aware of?
Well, because we are a local authority trading company, that LATCO, we're owned by the council, as you say, we're quickly able to sort of understand the needs of local councils. The joint ventures are focused on partnerships more than margins all the time. And we have a more open book approach to the service that we put in place. And as like I said before, we're able to offer that strong governance and experience. Within the joint venture model that we offer, we also offer marketing services, HR, payroll, health, safety, IT, quality assurance and procurement, and the local authority can work with many of our areas or just the operational area, for example. So we also offer a kind of a bridging system. And what I mean by that is where local authorities who are looking to bring services back in-house, they can utilise Norse and what we offer until they're ready to bring the services fully back in-house. So it comes across to us. We carry out a sort of tidy up operation, make things a bit more slick, and actually they're all ready to suddenly 2P back to the council, for example. So we've done that bridging before as well. And I think fundamentally with the Labour government and the drive towards more insourcing, the Norse model offers this option. We manage your staff, your operations, your assets and your supply chain for you. So, as you have ownership of that joint venture model with us, you still have that control. That's what differentiates us, really.
Thank you. Because I think from a perspective of even myself and my knowledge of Norse Group, having spoken with you a few times, understanding the depth of how it is as a group you operate in the public sector is so important. But obviously I am a self-confessed procurement nerd, so the bits that I've looked into have been those commercial sides of things, you know, not the wider picture and what it is as a whole that the Norse Group does. And I think from an outside perspective, there's a lot of people in the public sector who also look at, you know, look at what you've set up under TECL and how that works, that potentially a little bit confused about how that relationship works as well. So thank you for that explanation. And because I am a procurement nerd, my first question is going to be more along the lines of procurement. So as a, you know, organisation, the Norse Group within a public sector space, what are some of the key procurement challenges and also the opportunities that you're facing at the moment?
We're facing the same procurement challenges as everybody else at in the public sector at the moment. And we have an ever-growing pipeline of work, an increased expectation on what procurement can and should deliver. There's a lot of policy, such as carbon reduction, sustainability, the social responsibility and environmental targets. We also have the things on the outside, such as modern day slavery, etc., that we're supposed to consider and monitor. So we now have to publish far more notices, you know, to increase our transparency when we tender. So we also have to publish quarterly notices, yearly pipeline notices. And, you know, so we have all of this to do whilst navigating the many changes the Procurement Act brings. We also have to do that in face of tight budgets at our end, reduced finances for ourselves and our customers. But the Procurement Act does also bring opportunities for us to bring commercial thinking into what we do. We're starting to move away from the red tape surrounding the public purse. There is innovation within the profession in regards how AI can be used, for example. And I think collaborations seems to be a bit easier nowadays, I think. And training is becoming far more accessible. So there are many challenges, but there are also many plus points if you choose to use them, and opportunities to elevate procurement within your business. And that's one of my core aims and what I'm certainly seeking to do. I think the Procurement Act really brings to the front the need for procurement to be focused. And therefore, I think procurement departments have got a great opportunity now to elevate themselves to the top table and be part of that strategic plan for their authorities and their public sector.
I wondered how long into the conversation we'd get before the Procurement Act became part of the conversation, because obviously that has gone live now. It's gone live. Everybody is operating in a line to that legislation. There's lots going on, events that have been happening this week regarding that live launch, so that the public sector can get together and discuss it more broadly. I know that you and I have discussed it previously on the Truth About Local Government podcast as well. So I did think, how long would we get into the conversation before that one popped up?
And I'm sure we'll breathe it.
Yeah. I think we all do at the moment. I think everyone does. And I'm sure we'll converse about that a little bit further later on. But again, I'm just wanting to break down some of the language that we use when we talk about organisations like the Norse Group as well. So TECL, it's not a phrase that's widely known. I'd never heard of it before I started speaking to you. So what is, you know, what does it mean? What does it relate to?
Yeah, I'm not going to bore you with lots of it, but yes, TECL, it's fundamentally a principle that was born out of EU procurement law, which allows contracting authorities, who have mainly been local councils actually, to set up a kind of outward-facing business and to create a company which they own, which is primarily focused on delivering back to that local authority in the form of cash and services. So this company can also obviously trade with third parties a lot easier. And Norse is a TECL company, or a TECL vehicle, as some like to say, set up by Norfolk County Council under the rules of what was called vertical arrangements. And that's what the EU procurement law talks about. It talks about vertical arrangements, creating businesses to deliver you commercial value. And it also means Norfolk County Council, for example, do not need to tender certain services. You can pass services across to your TECL company without publicly tendering them. So that is a kind of, in a nutshell, what TECL is. It's a vertical arrangement. And there's also something called the Hamburg rules as well, which are horizontal arrangements. But yeah, so it's spelled TECKAL. TECL. It's born out of EU procurement law, and basically it allows councils, etc., to set up trading businesses.
And in your experience, having worked within the Norse Group now for a number of years and being such a big part of that, do you think that the TECL concept should be applied more broadly across local authority services?
Well, I think there are a number of local authorities who have TECL setups already. Nothing really on the scale of Norse Group, but it is out there. The thing is, with devolution on the horizon, it's hard to say whether this TECL model will continue and boom or reach a point of sort of levelling out and it becomes a little bit, we don't know. So the concept of outsourcing, it's insourcing because you own the company, you own that TECL company. That may mean that local authorities can set up TECL companies and pass certain procurement responsibilities to them, or even pass them to Norse by all means. As an established TECL company or a LATCO, you know, we're well positioned for that. But I mean, there are many benefits to this as councils, because you're able to pass the risk and responsibility to your JV partner. We call them the JV partners, but you retain certain levels of control, like I said before. So with the complexities of the Procurement Act, and hopefully councils want to take advantage of the benefits it brings, we may see further TECL companies being established, ones more and more prevalent in local authorities. So I was just going to say, at Norse, we've just launched our Norse Procurement Services, where we're helping local councils with their capacity issues by assisting them in taking procurements that need doing from sort of concept to completion, really. And fundamentally, we're taking a specification and the documents, we're publishing, we're managing, we're evaluating and awarding, all under the governance of PA 2023. And we are already seeing a pipeline within local authorities which is at bursting point. And therefore, they are reaching out, and we are reaching out, offering our services to sort of ease their woes, as it were. And it's proven to be popular already. So I think whether it's Norse Procurement Services that people use or other sort of consultancies of sorts, I think TECL, we might see it grow. It all depends on devolution and whether these large councils coming together think, hang on a minute, we could set up a TECL business which operates in a commercial nature to try and bring us more income.
Absolutely. And I think what you said there is interesting in terms of the Procurement Act and the legislation that you operate to. I think it might be seen by some of those in public sector that organisations like this are set up to get around certain legislation, because it is, you know, it's a different body, it's a different organisation. But you are operating to the same legislation as the wider public sector. You are adhering to those.
Yeah, because you're right. And it's worth me, sorry, just to jump in there. Any work that gets passed to the TECL company, anything that you then do to manage that has to be publicly tendered. So, for example, if you are passed a load of, say, catering for schools contracts, we do a lot of those for Norfolk County Council, all the food that we buy has to be publicly tendered. You cannot have the pleasure or the comfort of being passed work and then not publicly advertising opportunities to work. Do you know what I mean? So that's what's important to get across. You get passed work by your council or your contracting authority, but you then have to operate in the public sector when it comes to procuring the products or services you need to make that work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And thank you for clarifying that. I think that will dissolve some misconceptions in the wider market about organisations like the Norse Group. So we're going to move on now to a slightly different section of questions, because we've got quite a lot to cover. And we're going to talk about the Procurement Act 2023 in a bit more detail. So now that the Procurement Act 2023 has come into force, it is live, what do you see as its biggest long-term implications, you know, particularly local authority and procurement?
I think I have thought about this. I mean, I think one of the biggest long-term implications is that there's now such a large opportunity to work with the marketplace or industry that you're buying from to help you overcome your sort of commercial challenges. The introduction of this competitive flexible procedure, which I have indeed gone on about a lot, it does allow such a level of flexibility that you can really now take time to detail or project what it is that you are trying to achieve by detailing it all within your tender documents and tender process. And the long-term outcome of that should be that local authority procurement teams over the course of time can become far more knowledgeable within their critical areas and their high spend areas. So I think that's an initial sort of long-term implication. There's no doubt it's going to further enhance the need for procurement to be done properly, with the sort of commercial mindset at the forefront of what is being done. We're being expected to stop, think, and tender and do things in a far more sort of commercial mindset. It will hopefully lead to smaller businesses being more involved in public sector contracts. And I'll sort of talk about that later. The idea is it does. I think it will lead to stronger governance with things like the public review unit and, of course, the debarment list coming in. So suppliers who are acting in an improper manner will be removed from bidding from public work. And I think finally, it should also force public procurement professionals to make sure public money is being spent with the right suppliers, the right contractual terms are in place with measurable KPIs, and that those KPIs are being achieved. And big projects of the likes we see are not heading for huge budget situations or poor quality delivery anymore, the ones that sort of hit the press. So I think those are sort of some of the long-term things that, come to me now.
Yeah, and I personally find the debarment list potentially the most exciting element of what you've said there, because I think there's a long history of suppliers that have operated with certain organisations and haven't been able to deliver what they said they could, or haven't done what they have promised to do, and have acted unethically, that would then be hired by other public sector organisations at the other end of the country, completely unbeknownst and unaware of their involvement in that failure. And so I think that list provides a sense of security to the public sector, and it's a reassurance that, and I certainly think as a supplier, I'm not on that list, I'm a good supplier. And I think that's the attitude a lot of people will take.
It's interesting. Someone raised a very good point yesterday at the procurement expert at the NEC, and it's about, well, if a supplier is responsible for keeping their details on the central digital platform up to date. So there's a slight risk there. But for example, if a supplier is debarred for something, is a message going to go out to all the contracting authorities doing business with them about this debarment? And I think that hasn't been addressed yet. So yes, if you go on to tender, you can see who can bid and who cannot. But what if you're already in business with these people? How are you going to know? So I think there's a bit of an extension there with the central digital platform. We've all got these things called API keys now. So surely it's a case of, okay, Smith and Jones have just been debarred. They do business with all these API keys. Let's send out correspondence. So there is a little bolt on that I think will come in the future there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will be an interesting progression. And I think there'll be lots of things with the Procurement Act that progress as time goes on, that organisations are learning and raising, that will develop, the grey areas that will become less grey as things move through the process. But thinking again about how suppliers can struggle, are there specific areas where local authorities and their suppliers might not be able to progress things under the new Procurement Act, or they may struggle to get things moving?
Well, again, what I thought, I do think it's going to be challenging for local authorities and public sector businesses to convince SMEs and micro businesses that the public door is now more open. I do think, I mean, shall we say, I mean, new and that there are new opportunities available. I mean, I don't think we've gone far enough in this area. How do we help small businesses scale up quick enough, for example, to be able to manage bigger public sector opportunities? So we may find ourselves falling short in that aspect. There's still a great deal of emphasis on governance and contracting authorities needing to ask for all manner of assurances, which, of course, some SMEs simply and microbusiness simply can't offer. We have carbon net zero targets, social value initiatives, and sustainable supply chain requirements, and they're not on the radar of micro businesses. They're not on the radar at all. So another thing, I mean, we've also got to make sure all the services we procure are extra safe, but we continue to expect all our suppliers to have very high levels of accreditation, which are not always necessary, and of course, quite expensive for them to get and to maintain. So I think these are the areas where we might struggle to achieve what the Procurement Act asks us to do. It's that linking in of SMEs and micro businesses. When we send out a tender, it still averages about 4 inches thick once you print it off. And that for me, I mean, yes, we've done a couple of things such as, reducing the need for high levels of insurance until you win the bid. we should be allowing more time to encourage SMEs to find the time to bid. I'm not sure we've gone far enough there. I'd like to have seen a process similar to the below threshold process, where if you can specifically target SMEs, no matter what the value, and produce a lot smaller tender pack for them to bid against.
I think that's a brilliant idea. And I was speaking about this yesterday with a colleague of mine, specifically about, as a, you know, how do SMEs access bids? How do they know what to put in those bids when they don't have bid writers in their business, when they don't have those professionals readily available to them? And I have been personally in a situation where I was working in an SME and had to write a bid for a national framework, where one of the key questions was previous evidence to supply to organisations on that framework that legally have to adhere to that framework. So immediately you are preventing SMEs from gaining access to that, because if they're not already on that framework, they can't possibly evidence supply to the organisations on that framework. And so it's questions like that that I think I would really encourage, you know, bid writers and organisations to think about when they're putting together their tender packs, when they're putting together the information that they're going to suppliers with. You know, are you actually making it accessible to SMEs? Yes.
A simple change of question, talk about social value. Instead of saying demonstrate what social value you've delivered to your customers, why not just say, can you demonstrate the social value going forward that you will deliver for this contract? Do you know what I mean? So they haven't got evidence, loads of history of all these sort of buzz areas. So yeah, there's lots to be done. I mean, the NPPS, National Procurement Policy Statement, talks about the things we should consider, and us contracting authorities need to try and consider them. Breaking things into lots as well. Could we break this into a geographical lot to maybe encourage one SME in that area to put in a bid? So yeah, there's lots.
Almost too much to think about. So in your advice as a tenured professional procurement leader, I think you're FSIPs now, aren't you, Simon? So that's
I am super exciting.
Congratulations. How would you encourage procurement teams to proactively prepare for the changes, and what support and guidance, and I know you've written lots of white papers available on the Norse Group website about the Procurement Act and preparedness, but anybody that's lagging behind a little bit now, what would you encourage them to do?
It's tricky, isn't it? I mean, one would hope people aren't sort of necessarily lagging behind, but I think one, as I've said before, there is a huge amount of support and guidance out there. I mean, you only have to log on to the gov.uk website to find countless amounts of information to help both buyers and suppliers. Mm-hmm. We did a little piece on our website about, posted some videos about how suppliers can log on to the central digital platform, etc. I think rather than get drowned by all the information, focus on the key areas, and the key areas to know are the changes to how evaluation is shared amongst bidders. We've always had to be transparent, but now we have to be even more transparent. So focus on making sure your evaluations are good. Obviously, there's the introduction of the new process, competitive flexible procedure. Make sure you understand that. That replaces a number of current processes and allows you to do so much more. And of course, there is an increase in the publishing requirements. So understand evaluation, the new process, and what you need to publish. And if you use an eSender, they will be able to help you with all that. The central digital platform has now been introduced, and you need to get registered on there as a buyer as soon as you can. It's relatively straightforward. But there's information everywhere. There's training courses and videos, a wealth of people, including people like us who are happy to support and help. And but I do believe there has been a positive uptake. I mean, I mentioned the procurement expo that I went to yesterday at the NEC. Mm-hmm. And within 3 days, there has already been £14 billion worth of tenders put onto the new platform. So there's a stat for you. And that stat does suggest that many people are ready. They've got their tenders, they've put open procedures on, and there's already £14 billion out there for tender. So the uptake has been relatively good, I think.
That's really exciting to hear, because I think there was a lot of conversations in the wider procurement market about, would the platform be ready in time? You know, would it function? What would the first tenders going out look like? How, you know, what sort of categories or requirements would they be? So the fact that that's been taken up so quickly and those have been laid shows that there were organizations that were really ready for this and were really thinking about this before it went live.
I think it was 66 tenders, I think it was. Don't quote me on that, but I think it was 66 tenders already on there, and it went live, Monday, didn't it? So, that was 3 days' worth. So, yeah, it looks positive.
There's some eager buyers out there that were straight onto that portal loading up that information.
on the other side of that, I think the Friday before saw a record amount of notices going on as well, with the latest one going on at about 11:53 Friday night, a particular contracting authority. So there was also a bit of an unnecessary push to get tenders out against PCR 2015. So there's been a bit of both. Some are highly organised, some not quite so.
Yes, yeah, and I think it's always the way with any major change, isn't it, that's ongoing. Some people are wanting to just remain where they are and hold that off as long as possible. Others embrace it and move forward. And that leads on really nicely to a lot of change ongoing within the political local authority environments. Now, I know that the Norse Group is linked to and closely working with local authorities, multiple local authorities, yeah, not just Norfolk. So I would really love to hear about, you know, if you can share some information on, you know, the local authorities. Everyone knows they're under increasing financial pressures. Yes. How do you see the reshaping of procurement strategies in the coming years to work on this and to support that change?
I think at the moment there's about a £2 billion shortfall, isn't there, in funds for local authorities at present. Mm. And these budget cuts are very real as well. And you've already heard me talk about the investment required into procurement. So, you know, we can realise the benefits of the Procurement Act. I mean, we may have new legislation, but we still have the same capacity in procurement. So councils have large deficits. So procurement, we hope, should very much come under the spotlight, because they need to start driving savings. So it is these sort of financial shortfalls that give me concern, actually, that the many elements of the Procurement Act won't all come to fruition, and that price will remain the deciding factor. We talk about mission-driven procurement. You hear Labour talking about mission-driven procurement, and we talk about societal gains, and we talk about sustainability. But with budgets as tight as they are, I feel price will still be the deciding factor. And yes, efficiencies add value, and they are genuine benefits. We know that. But do they affect the bottom line? You know, that's the question. So the strategy hopefully won't just be what's the cheapest deal. Hopefully the strategy will be to adopt the benefits of the Procurement Act, the competitive flexible procedure, and start operating with not just price in mind.
And I think that's a really important point for this conversation in terms of procurement as a whole and how that's viewed within public sector businesses. I think there's always been, and I reflect over 10 years ago working on my first cost improvement programme manager that sat within a PMO and a finance team and had no, you know, procurement had no influence on that role in the public sector. Procurement wasn't part of that conversation. And when you think about the role of procurement, about, you know, driving good prices, about making sure money is spent wisely, but also about the wider benefit of how that money is spent, it's absolutely the right place to start the conversation is procurement.
Yes. Yes. And I think if people still believe procurement do one thing, let's look at price. They're in the dark ages now, to be fair. We have that all encompassing role. We touch many areas of the business, and we are the starting point to achieve the savings and efficiency that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. So with those shifting government priorities and all the policies that are shifting as well, how can procurement teams ensure they remain agile and adaptable in delivering those priorities?
Oh, yeah, I mean, you talk about shifting government priorities. And of course, now we're seeing, as I just said, this mission drive government, and procurement can obviously play a big role in that. We need to make sure we continue to drive innovation. We need to promote the use of national procurement policy statement and the directives of, you know, of that, and where we can. And we need to better use frameworks, better use leverage, and all the other tools being made available to us. That's our part. That's our responsibility in this. I think procurement teams are already very adaptable. I think we wouldn't have been able to cope with the ever-changing climate if we weren't adaptable. The information is out there. There's so much guidance to help buyers where they don't feel confident in any part of the regulations. So I think we need to take it upon ourselves to ensure that we are up to speed with the changes being made, and also taking advantage of the new opportunities to deliver best value and actually begin negotiating more. Yeah, if people have been in the public sector a long time, they might not know really what negotiation is. And we need to start operating in a private sector manner there and start to negotiate exactly like the private sector would do. I think another thing is the use of pre-market engagement. That's going to be critical. So not only does this help you learn about the market you're going to buy from, it also gives you the opportunity to ensure you shape your tender in a manner that gets the best out of the market. Procurement teams need to make sure they are asking the right questions during pre-market engagement, and that includes the right specifications, asking the right quality questions, and how do we set our price evaluation out in a manner that allows bidders to give best prices. Don't go and set your pricing in a way that the suppliers are not sure on it and they're going to build pricing to cover risk. So I think often in procurement, we have to be the jack of all trades, right? And we put together our tenders without always knowing the best way to ask the best questions. So, you know, adaptability is key, making sure you learn, and we should take advantage of pre-market engagement whenever we can.
Absolutely right. All really sound advice. And I, you know, sometimes I make people that I work with laugh because I say I welcome negotiation. As a supplier in the market, I would love for the public sector to negotiate more. I would love for them to follow up on all of the extra additional things that are guaranteed in contracts when suppliers are awarded, you know, whether it's the social value elements, whatever that might be. I think as a supplier, I probably speak on behalf of a lot of suppliers when I say, please do this. You know, please do it, because we want to be engaged with, we want to be tested and negotiated. It's something that we welcome. So I think all the points you raised there are brilliant. I absolutely love speaking to you every time we speak, Simon. I really enjoy it. I feel like I learned so much. I hope that our listeners have learned a lot from today as well. Thank you so much for coming. I will absolutely invite you in the future, if that's okay, to join in on more conversations. And if anybody has any questions, I'll make sure there are links and information about the Norse Group in the podcast below on their website where we launch it. And I very much look forward to speaking to you again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Hannah. Thank you.